You're listening to the Jameel Giovanni Show on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Jameel Giovanni back here with you. And coming up in half an hour, we are going to talk about a Supreme Court case based on a joke. Yes, comedian Mike Ward. He is before the Supreme Court about a joke that was so offensive that it has become a potential free speech crisis. And we're going to talk about that, not with a lawyer, not with some expert to talk about the courts. No, we're going to talk about it with a comedian, in particular, a guy named Ryan Long, who I find to be hilarious. He's a Canadian comedian who's making it big in the U.S. right now. One of the funniest guys you're going to find anywhere. And I can't wait to talk with him. That's coming up in half an hour. But before we get there, breaking news research that suggests there's a connection between belief in conspiracy theories and COVID-19 vaccine hesitancy. Vaccines are the biggest story in the world right now. Whether the rollouts are going well or not, how long is it going to take for us to get access to them? Vaccines are on the top of everyone's minds, but a lot of folks may not actually opt to take a vaccine, especially if they believe in a conspiracy theory that suggests the vaccine is not a good idea. So I'm very curious to learn more about this, and to help us understand what this new research is saying, we're happy to welcome onto the show Kelly Peters. She is president and CEO of BE Works. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. It's so wonderful to have a chance to talk with you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for making time for us. Let's start with this research study. What is it and what did we learn from it?
Well, there's been a lot of research trying to understand this issue of how many people are going to take the vaccine. We know some stuff from the epidemiological models that tell us, you know, we need to have a lot of us actually taking the vaccine to end this pandemic. And the epidemiologists have run the numbers, and there's kind of this expectation that it's around 85% of us need to take the vaccine. Okay, so if that's what the epidemiological models say, then how many of us are ready to go, ready to do this thing? But we know that a lot of folks have been scared about vaccines, not just the COVID-19 vaccine, but just vaccines in general. And some are just outright opposed to it. And research has uncovered those numbers for us, and we see that we don't have that 85% ready to roll up their sleeve. We see that we've got around 50 or 60% of us that are ready to go stand in line right now. But then after that, it gets a little bit more interesting and a lot more complicated. About a third of us are kind of on the fence about the whole thing. We've got a lot of different things going on in our mind about why we're not ready to just roll up our sleeves real fast. And then about 1 in 10 of us are just saying, mm-mm, no way, I'm out. So other studies have seen this, but we needed to actually understand why. Why? What's going on? What are the factors? Because then maybe we can develop the interventions that will help us solve this problem and help us get this pandemic over with.
Now, from what I understand, because this is fascinating to me, Kelly, the conspiracy theories that people believe in don't necessarily have to be about COVID-19. It's just a connection between a willingness to accept conspiracy theories in general and belief that the vaccine might not be a good idea to accept. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. And I think that there's just so much that we can learn about society and our overall position right now on just a number of different factors from looking at and understanding where people are coming from when it comes to not wanting to take the vaccine. So part of our research was, look, we just wanted to understand how people think. And as behavioral scientists, we can do that kind of research. So a classic tool that we use is this thing called this bat and ball problem. Maybe you've heard of it, but don't say the answer, Jameel, because I know that you're very quick on the draw, and you've probably already researched this. But maybe if you can just let your audience have a chance to figure out the answer themselves, that would be great. So let me ask this question, folks. It's a bat cost $1 more than a ball. how much does the ball cost? So the bat costs a dollar more than a ball. How much does the ball cost? So it seems that the answer might actually be, 10 cents if the total cost is 110. But the actual cost is 5 cents. And when you look at this on paper, or if you're, not driving, you work out the algebra, you could see that your intuitive version of the answer is, in fact, wrong. It's actually 5 cents and not the seemingly obvious 10 cents. This is an example of what's called a cognitive reflection task. You might have seen them, things like, a lily pad doubles, every day, how many lily pads would be across the lake after a month. These are these little kind of word puzzles that let us see the difference between an answer that seems obvious, but the actual correct answer sometimes takes, going through some steps of algebra. So we tend to see that people who are very intuitive generally tend to get the answers to those questions wrong. But people that are more analytical and reflective, the spreadsheet types that like to analyze things, they generally tend to get those questions right. Okay, well, you know what? We can actually start to see a lot of other things cascade from that habit of using intuition versus using that more analytical reasoning. And it means that when we approach things like really, important but complex scientific issues, if we're using our intuition, it might lead us to making, coming to the wrong conclusion. And that's what our research was about, is let's start there. But then when you start to combine it with some of the other factors that we've got going on in our society, you combine it with things like low knowledge about science. We ask people questions like, which is bigger, an atom or an electron? We ask people if antibiotics work on viruses. And it turns out that there's a lot of folks who get the answers to these fundamental science questions wrong. So then you combine that with people's beliefs in evidence versus their own personal opinion. We would ask people things like, okay, if the evidence conflicts with what you believe, does that mean that maybe your beliefs are wrong? Or regardless of the topic, if what you believe to be, is true, is that more important than evidence that goes against your beliefs? And we find that there are people who say, hey, my belief is more important than what the evidence says. So if as a society that boundary between what's true and what's false is hard for us to discern, if someone believes that their opinion is more valid and more correct than evidence, we're on a slippery slope in a place that's really hard for us to progress. So now you combine that with conspiracy theories. So we've got this intuition, right, that I mentioned earlier. We've got this low scientific literacy. We've got this issue around people thinking that their personal opinion is more valid than evidence. And you combine that with conspiracy theories, and those are some of the factors that bring us to where we're at right now.
Wow. I only got a minute, Kelly, until I need to hit the commercial. But quickly, what do you expect governments to do about this in terms of how to convince more people so that we can achieve herd immunity?
Yeah. Thank you again so much for the time. I'd love for everyone to read this report. We're in this thing together. I think that our government needs to recognize that this isn't one strategy. This isn't like a simple awareness campaign. We need different strategies that address the concerns of people who are opposed to vaccines, who are coming at this with distrust in government and science itself and academia. We need to help work through some of these major institutional factors of distrust to help us move forward. For folks that are on the fence, we need to have differentiated strategies for them. And for the folks that are already ready to go with the vaccine, you need to wear that badge with pride, help create social proof that there are still a vast majority of us, and we need to be ready, willing, and able to support our colleagues and friends and family and be patient with them and don't shame them and help understand.
All right, I'm going to have to pause you there, Kelly, but thank you so much for joining us. We will be back on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
The Jameel Giovanni Show continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Jameel Giovanni back here with you on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. And you know, earlier in the show, we were talking about when you feel disrespected, undervalued by your boss, by your manager, by your supervisor, the people writing your checks. You're not feeling the love from them. And that's a frustrating feeling. I mean, especially if you're that guy who has been working at McDonald's throughout the pandemic and they gave you a pin as a thank you. Well, let me tell you, if you're upset about that, I can understand where you're coming from. But it's a whole other thing to go from feeling disrespected and undervalued to believing your workplace is toxic. That's reaching another level. And there, let me tell you, as a viral TikTok trend where people were are sharing stories about when they realized their workplace is toxic and what they did about it. I want to play you some of the TikTok videos about this, but if you want to share a story about when you learned your workplace is toxic, you are welcome to call us 1-855-633-1010 or send me a text message at 71010. Again, we're talking about moments you learned. It's not just you don't like your job. Maybe you don't feel respected, maybe you don't feel valued, but it's where it went all the way up a level to feeling like, man, this is a toxic environment I'm working in. And if that happened to you, I'd love to hear your story. So give us a call. Now, as I mentioned, you know, the thing I love about what goes viral online is that it can start anywhere. And in this case, it's a 26-year-old by the name of Lindsay Hansen. She posted a video about a workplace she was in while working in accounting in Boston, okay? And her experience of what it was like to figure out, man, this is a toxic place. And nearly 40,000, yes, 40,000 people liked her video, 5,000 plus people commented on it, and tons of people started sharing their own examples of toxicity in the workplace. Let's start with the original video by Lindsay Hansen, where she realized her workplace was toxic. Take a listen.
Okay, this one's for my millennials. Tell me the moment when you realized that your workplace was toxic AF. Mine was when I asked my senior to come eat lunch with me and he said he can't because he didn't want people to see him taking a lunch break.
I mean, that sounds miserable, okay? Like, you those places where it's like you need to look busy as opposed to, you know, being effective. Any workplace where people feel they need to look busy is a disaster. And, you know, when I was a student and I would do internships and, you know, trying to get my career going, I would often run into that where you look around and you see your other interns are, you know, working through lunch. They're working through dinner. They won't leave. And you're sitting there wondering like, man, like, are you really that busy? Or are you just trying to be around to show people how hard you're working? And the minute that is currency, the minute appearances of being busy matter more than the actual quality of your work, not good at all. So I'm not surprised that Lindsay, you know, when it dawned on her that she wouldn't be able to have lunch with her boss because her boss wanted to look busy, that is a sign of toxicity for sure. And a lot of people resonated with that. You know, a lot of people were like, man, this is, they also had those moments where it dawned upon them, you know what? This is not a place I want to stay any longer than I can help it. So there were tons of stories that poured in, many of them from women, actually, which I thought was very interesting because, you know, they had, it was a chance for me at least to learn about some of the unique experiences women might have in the workplace. Here is a follow-up to Lindsay's video from another woman who says she told her boss she wanted time off for a honeymoon months in advance. And her boss said, no. Yes, you heard that right. Take a listen.
I realized that my past workplace was very toxic when I went to go tell my boss that I had finally planned my wedding and my honeymoon. And she told me, no, that's not going to work for us. Even though I had told her months, more than 6 months in advance, that's not going to work for us because it's on a certain date that our magazine gets published. And we need you here working for that day, even though there was plenty of other employees. And I was a salesperson, so I sold ads, and my job was done by the time the magazine was being published. That's when I knew I probably needed to leave.
Yo, that's rough, let me tell you. Like, I do not have it in me to say to someone, no, actually, I'm going to make it complicated for you to schedule your honeymoon 6 months in advance. That's some cold-hearted stuff. That's some stone-cold boss right there who just, you know, like, I don't know how you even say that to someone, to be honest. That's a rough one. A friend of mine just sent me a text here saying, my moment was when I worked for Parks Canada as a teen and was told we weren't allowed to use the staff bathroom. We had to use the public one, which was disgusting. I can only imagine what that would be like. And yeah, pretty rough, man. Like, just so I worked in kitchens and had some rough bosses at times, but never had anyone with that kind of attitude where they're telling you got to use the public bathroom, or in the case of this woman, you're being told 6 months in advance that you can't take your honeymoon. That is a rough way to treat somebody. All right, another response to Lindsay Hansen's viral TikTok video from a woman who talks about her boss lying to her about dying from cancer. Just listen to this one.
Mine goes, we were at a company festival and my then boss had taken a lot of drugs the night before, and I'm pretty sure he was still high in the morning. We were all like chilling by the pool, and I think he was trying to like make an effort to get to know me because I was still pretty new. And then he basically said to me that he had cancer and he was going to die in a couple of days. So me being the sympathetic person that I was obviously shocked, but I tried to give him advice considering I had a sister that had passed like 2 years earlier, not because of cancer. But anyway, then he turned around after I'd given him all this advice and basically said, I'm just f***ing with you. And then I quit like a whole month later.
Oh my God, this is like the Seinfeld episode where the guy lies about having cancer and Jerry buys him a toupee, and he still refuses to tell the truth because he wants the toupee. I mean, I don't know what gets into some people. Like, you know, as a guy who's just went into remission from a cancer diagnosis, I take that one a little personally. You're out here lying to people about having cancer. Not just people. You're a boss. You're a supervisor. You're a manager. And you're lying to your employees about having cancer? That is some wild, manipulative stuff. I mean, what do you say to that? That is wild. All right. These clips, just this kind of stuff some people have dealt with just fascinates me. Fascinates me and disgusts me at the same time, what some of these bosses are capable of. All right. The last one we've got for you is a montage of two women talking about their toxic workplaces. And the owner of the store that they worked at preferred women because, according to him, they don't talk back, quote unquote. And the general manager fired them for not taking a management job. Just sounds like a real disaster of a workplace. Listen up.
This is a much older job that I had, but there was one time where I heard the owner of the store comment that he preferred hiring women because they did not talk back. He also, in the process of firing someone, brought up that they were trans.
The GM at my old job pressured me to take a management job from my serving job, and I ended up getting so much better than him that he would continuously stalk me on the cameras, and once he got the opportunity, fired me during COVID.
Oh, look at that. You know, one of the things I love about storytelling, and that's what we do on this show, right? We're telling you stories, whether it's stories about the news or stories about our personal lives or hearing stories from others. What I love about stories is that I get to learn things that I maybe never would see otherwise, right? You know, as a dude, I don't hear people talk about, you know, women in the workplace like that. But some of the things that women have had to experience with some bosses out there, mind-boggling stuff. And I appreciate the women who've gone on TikTok and shared these stories because it's stuff that helps me learn about what's going on out here. It's wild. It is wild. So as I said, look, there's a difference between just, you know, feeling disrespected at your job, feeling undervalued, or it getting to a place of being toxic. And I think these are some stories that show how things just get to a whole new level. We'll be right back with comedian Ryan Long talking about a court case that might threaten his job and his free speech. We'll be right back.
The Jamil Giovanni Show is on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We are back. Jamil Giovanni here with you on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. And I got to say, I'm pretty pumped about our guest right now. He is a comedian. He's Canadian, but he's making moves in the U.S. right now. His name is Ryan Long. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Yo, what's up, man? How you doing? I know you work with Patrick, too, so good to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you too, man. You know, I got to tell you, Ryan, your YouTube channel has been the highlight of my Mondays for months now. So thank you for what you're putting out there, man.
Thanks, man. Well, yeah, I'm not a stand-up comedian anymore, so now I'm a YouTuber. I downgraded.
Well, I think you're back to doing some live shows I saw, right? Are you in Philadelphia next, I think?
Yeah, it's pretty cool because, you know, with all this internet stuff, you're just like, are these real people or is it just numbers? But then you kind of like, there was a bit where I would walk around New York. I was doing all these street interviews and I started to like almost not be able to do it because people were like, yo, it's that guy. And then I put on three shows to like test the waters and they all sold out. So it's that's kind of cool.
Yeah, good for you. Well, one of the things I want to ask you about, and I don't know how much attention you pay to the Canadian comedy scene anymore, but there is a Supreme Court case going on right now involving a Quebec comedian named Mike Ward. And he made a joke, a controversial joke, I suppose, about a young disabled man at one of his shows. And that has made quite a lot of news, leading to a case that many are saying might threaten the future of free speech and comedy in Canada. What do you make of that story, and what's your take on the state of free speech and comedy in our country?
Well, the first part is not only do I not pay attention to the Canadian comedy scene, I don't pay attention to Canada, period. When I even see your politics, I'm like, you guys are still doing that? That's adorable that you're still trying to be a country. I left Canada in the dust. But the Mike Ward thing is huge, so I think I knew about that already. And I think everyone in America knows about the Mike Ward thing. And there's like a couple parts of it. I mean, you know, because I think Mike Ward's awesome. And whether or not when you kind of do stuff like this, they force you to kind of live or die by a single joke. And I don't know exactly what his take on it. And the truth is, it would be irrelevant to me whether I, you know, stood by it or not. But that's kind of like what they always do to usher in censorship, right? It's the same reason why they try to get people off internet. I mean, they go, well, what do you think that you should be able to call this woman this? And they go, no. And they're like, okay, so you agree with the rules then that we're about to put in here. Like, they want to legislate my morality, essentially, right? And then they get to put in their 4,000 committees. And Canadian politics, they love committees. The Hall Monitor class in Canada, they love it.
They sure do love their committees. That's true.
They love committees.
what do you expect to come out of this? I mean, whether the court case goes in one way or the other, do you think this might have a freezing effect on comedy where comedians in Canada might be a little bit more gun shy about certain jokes?
It's kind of like, you know, we're having this conversation now, but you're talking about something that probably has been slowly declining for a long time. And the truth is, like, people will always kind of vote and vote away their freedoms and be convinced by politicians to give away their freedoms. Like, you're watching that with COVID, you're watching that with censorship. So, I mean, it's kind of, like, always happening. And the issue isn't, in my opinion, like, I like Mike a lot, but he's not even really the issue because you go, okay, Mike Ward's, you know, a big star and whatever, he has money and... But the problem is then you go, and everyone goes, even if you agree with that, you go, there's like some dude in Alberta that got fined 60 grand for like making a joke at an open mic. So it's the next ones will come, and then they'll go, oh, I don't agree with that. And you're like, well, it's too late because it's already, you made these laws that you can't say anything. Like, if you, how long with the COVID stuff? I thought it was so funny because remember, I guess when they started kicking Trump off and they got rid of Parler and all this stuff, and everyone's kind of like cheering for it. And then, you know, a few people were like, you're going to regret this. And it didn't take, it was like 2 weeks later with the GameStop thing that they started, you know, they got rid of the Discord when the GameStop people were, you know, kind of organizing against Wall Street. And the same people were all like, yo, this is crazy. Big Tech has too much power. And you're like, yeah, so we can stop the timer. And it took 9 days for you to be wrong now. It happened
yeah,
so
that's,
quick.
So call that's, me. That's,
yeah, that,
that's
mean,
a.
Right, yeah, sorry.
I was just going to say, so do you think there's a, is that a difference, you think, in the U.S. and Canada? Like, as a comedian, do you feel a bit freer to make jokes and say what's on your mind in the U.S.? Is there a difference at all between the two countries?
Well, I think that it's hard to, you kind of want to look at, in my opinion, the, you know, the culture as a, the, you know, culture is sort of downstream from politics or vice versa or one of those, you know, the thing. But like, regardless of whether it's a lot, you know, it's obviously the logical extreme that now people are getting fined for this and it's, you know, this is what happens. But this didn't like happen in a vacuum. I mean, this is like essentially the will of the people in Canada. So I think most people would agree with this. And the same way, so you can't, you just have to, cultures exist, you know. And if you look at China and they have this and, you know, it's all just a safety versus freedom discussion that like cultures need to like have with each other, with themselves. Right. And in my opinion, if you look at Canada, and that's what's better about America, is it's big enough. It's got sort of a freedom. It's got like a freedom culture. It's got a constitution. And that's why, you know, the better artists make things there. That's why they have all the innovation. But you also, you know, in certain cities have homeless people on the streets, and, you know, it's probably, if you're poor, maybe it's not the best. So it's not just ever about this, like, one thing. So it's kind of a, like a conversation of, like, what a culture wants to be. For me, obviously, I prefer freedom over safety, whether that's, you know, whether we're talking about, like, the strict COVID protocols. Like, right now in New York, it's completely shut down. So I'm moving to Miami until that's over. So I'm going to move to somewhere where I can, you know, operate my business, and I'm going on tour, not in any of these places. But it's like, if everyone wants it, if you have a house and 20 people are like, we can't wait for this, and this is what we want. We want the government to be on our phones and make sure that no one says anything bad. And it kind of, your campaign to get people on board with this happened over 10 years. And it seems to me that there is like a resistance, but they're not very loud, and they're sort of, you know, you're afraid. Like, there's a lot of business people in Canada that don't want to say anything because they don't want to lose their job, they don't want to make a stink. Whereas in America, the people are like, hell yeah, dude, I'll be the poster boy for being in trouble. Like, that's why your conservatives can't win in Canada, because conservatives in Canada are just like, yeah, we'll be sort of the mild conservative guy. And you're like, that doesn't work. If you want to kind of run now in this new context, you have to sort of be fine with people saying bad things about you. And I think that a lot of people in Canada aren't, and me, it's like, even the stuff I'm doing is fairly, I don't know what you'd call it, dissonant. And part of that game is now I have a lot of people yelling at me on the internet.
Yeah, but you also have a lot of people cheering for you, right?
Yeah, that's kind of always what it is, you know what I mean? So there's always like a positive and negative of this. And, you know, you've tried to find an equilibrium that the least people on the, you know, that are on the left or whatever aren't, their life, this is, you know, their life isn't, this isn't like the worst thing to happen to them. And then you try to find a middle ground where at least people on the right were really mad. I think right now you kind of have it where the sort of like liberal consensus is where Canada is right now. So that's just what it's going to be, right? So if the culture of Canada changed and people were a little more freedom oriented, you would probably not see stuff like this happened, or it wouldn't even be that relevant if it did. Because if you have someone like Mike Ward, and they want to fine him $50,000, and there's this like human rights tribunal, and people are against that, your media would be like, this is crap. And it wouldn't even, you know, it probably wouldn't get here. It's like, to act like these judges aren't kind of activists to some degree. So I'll tell you one thing Mike Ward has going for him. The hot button issues changed so much that like when Mike Ward made this joke, kind of making fun of someone for a disability was something that people were kind of up in arms about. now it's like that's got to be 10th on the list of things people care about. So like,
that's a good point, Ryan.
Care about a white like disabled guy? That's like low on the list of protected classes, right? Now. So they changed quickly.
Thanks so much for joining us, Ryan. Really appreciate it, and glad Pat connected us.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully, I can come to Toronto sometime and do shows when the stuff is over.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. We'll be right back on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back to the Jamil Giovanni Show on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We are back. Jamil Giovanni here with you. And you know what? If you guys want to feel old, I'm going to tell you something, all right? I want to tell you something. Today it was announced that there is a Mario Kart 9 coming out. Yes, there have been 9 Mario Kart games, at least. Maybe there have been more than that, but at least 9 of them. And you know, the first one came out when I was, I think, 4 or 5 years old. So I've been a sentient, thinking, video game playing human being for the entire time Mario Kart has been a thing. And it makes me feel old, man, when I think about that. It makes me feel old. When you look back at what the first Mario Kart was like, and I was a kid and I thought this was some kind of futuristic, awesome thing. And then I see what Mario Kart 9 looks like. It makes the video games I grew up playing look like how I felt looking at Atari or something, you know, or Pac-Man or something. You know what I mean? It makes you feel old when you look at this stuff. Now, to me, I would go so far as to say Mario Kart is my favorite video game ever. I loved it. I've loved it my entire life from when I was 5 all the way until now. I am a huge Mario Kart fan, and I have not owned a Nintendo gaming system in quite a while, so I have not played any of the new Mario Karts for at least, you know, 10 or 15 years now, but I am a fan of Mario Kart. You know what I did buy is one of those like new Super Nintendos that have the games programmed into them, and I did play the old Mario Kart on that, I think maybe last year or something, one of my ways of getting through that first wave of the pandemic when it was brutal, when you were just getting used to it and you were sitting there and you were losing your mind trying to figure out what to do with yourself. Super Nintendo got me through a lot of those tough times. So I'm a big Mario Kart fan, but man, when I learned today that Mario Kart 9 came out, I felt about as old as I felt in my entire life, everybody. So there we go. Shout out to Mario Kart. Now, and also shout out to my sisters, because I beat them in Mario Kart so many times. I feel bad for them even bringing it up. Sorry, guys. Ha! All right. Want to move on to some other stories I want to share with you today. So those of you who may remember the movie Silence of the Lambs and the character Buffalo Bill, okay? Yeah, that's a pretty freaky movie. Like, if you saw it when you were younger, like I did, it's especially disturbing. But even as a grown-up, it's a disturbing film, all right? And get this, the house where Buffalo Bill lives, the house from The Silence of the Lambs, you can actually rent it now as a bed and breakfast. Yeah. If you want to treat your significant other to a romantic getaway and also frighten them, you can take them to The Silence of the Lambs house for a bed and breakfast treatment. Sounds like a blast. I'm not sure. I feel like that would have the opposite of the intended effect on my wife. If I took her for a vacation and that's where I took her, she would be freaked out. I'd have to take her on 2 more vacations just to deal with the whatever came out of that first one. That's how I feel about this one. Now, for those of you who don't remember that movie, it's quite creepy, and I want to play you a clip just to get you back into that mind frame. What is Silence of the Lambs about, and how must it feel to be in that house? Here's a clip of the villain in that movie, or one of the villains, Buffalo Bill.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told.
Mister, my family will pay cash. Whatever ransom you're asking for, they'll pay it.
It rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again.
That's freaking me out just listening to it. And a guy paid $300,000 for the property where that creepy scene was filmed. And the new owner, who's actually a theatrical art director, is saying, is going to, you know, redo it, give it a makeover, but he's going to keep the Silence of the Lambs motif. And I don't know what couple wants to go and hang out there, but yep, there's something out there for everybody. So hopefully people enjoy it. I'll leave it at that. All right, another story I want to tell you guys about. So a Toronto actor and comedian by the name of Julie Nolk. By the way, speaking of comedians, I just want to give another shout out to Ryan Long. I loved that interview. As I told him when he was on the air with us, the videos he puts out on YouTube and social media every Monday, the sketches, the clips that he puts out there, hilarious, really, really fun. And part of why they're so funny, this is kind of why I also love Dave Chappelle, is that it's not just comedy, but it's incisive social commentary. That's what Ryan is really good at. And yeah, I encourage you, just look him up. Easy name to spell, Ryan Long. Look him up on YouTube. Look him up on social media. Find his stuff. I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit. My favorite video of his is one where he shows that a person who represents wokeness and a person who represents racism having a conversation together. It's pretty hilarious. And again, very incisive political commentary. Now, another Canadian actor and comedian by the name of Julie Nolk has found viral success by providing much needed laughs to people by poking fun at the pandemic situation that we're all in. And she has done this series where she explains the pandemic to her past self. She's got millions of views on Facebook and YouTube and other places where, you know, she's basically trying to talk to her past self about what the pandemic is. And it's really, really creative and quite, hilarious, I would say. So I want to play you a couple of clips from Julie Nolk. Again, another Canadian comedian doing it big on social media. I love seeing that. Here's a clip from Julie called "I Have a Sore Throat."
I'm sorry, does my sore throat offend you?
Well, no, not exactly.
So what's with all the attitude?
Well, it's just you don't need to shout it out every time you feel the slightest thing.
Okay.
Nope, it's not, it's not okay. I'm sorry, it's just, it's not. Cause you're over there sitting on your ivory tower spouting off symptoms like you're an auctioneer, and meanwhile I'm over here now thinking that I'm sick.
I'm sorry.
Wait. Yep.
What?
I have a sore throat now.
Oh my God. No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And it's your fault.
How is it my fault?
Because you invaded my brain.
No, I haven't.
Well, there you have it. Julie explaining the pandemic to her past self. It's been a huge hit online. As I said, great to see a Canadian comedian doing it big. Here's another clip from Julie called "Explaining the Pandemic to My Past Self," where she's talking about to an October 2020 version of herself.
How are you?
Not good.
Oh God. Oh God. What is happening?
Well, you ever heard of a monolith?
No. No, I've literally never heard of that word in my life.
Oh my God, get ready. You're about to be so invested in one.
I am?
Yeah, because it's there, and then it's not there. Nobody knows where it went.
Okay, I gotta be honest, that doesn't sound that bad.
Do you play chess?
A little.
Yeah, well, you know I do. I'm just not good at it.
Loser.
What do you mean, loser? You're the loser, too.
All right, you just want to brush up on your Sicilian defense, okay?
Okay. That doesn't sound too bad. That actually sounds fun.
No, it's not fun. It's not fun. Everything is going wrong. Everything is bad.
Oh, is it with the American election? Oh my God, what is happening down there?
Oh, the states? The states is they're doing them. They're gonna figure it out, or they won't, but they're doing the states.
Oh.
All right. Well, obviously, explaining to your past self what the heck is going on in America these days, not that easy. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Tuesday. Hope you had a great time. We will be back with you tomorrow. This is the Jamil Giovanni Show on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.